This is CICK News.
Was Chelsea on the plane? Was she on the plane? You should see this. I don't know what's going on. I don't know. All I need to know, did she make the plane?
Today on CICK News, the town of Smithers conducted a wide-ranging training exercise on Friday, May 23rd at the Smithers Regional Airport, hospital, and a number of emergency response crews, organizations, and regional systems for dealing with a mass casualty event were involved. The training was designed to develop frontline response capabilities and the coordination of a simulated EOC, or Emergency Operations Center. Participants included the Smithers Fire Department, RCMP, BC Ambulance Service, Canadian Rangers, search and rescue teams, Bulkley Valley District Hospital, emergency response representatives from Telqua, Whitsett, Houston, and the regional district of Bulkley-Nechako. A warning to our listeners, some of the audio that you will hear are the screams of the passengers on the aircraft at the site of the crash. These are students who are enrolled in a pre-health class who are acting like they have survived a crash. No one was actually harmed.
So we're part of the ESS, so the Bulkley Emergency Support Services Program.
Okay. And so you're all members of ESS.
Yeah.
Okay, and so what are some of your roles here?
My brother's stepping out of a flight from Vancouver.
Okay.
And I want to know what's going on.
Yeah. And the plane crashed?
We don't know that yet.
Okay.
We're going to find out.
Okay.
How about yourself?
We don't know all the details yet, okay. But today our task is to be friends and family members of the people involved in the incident. Mm-hmm. And so we are here to help test the airlines, I guess, as to how they would respond in this situation.
Okay. I guess just one last question, which is, how do you think that this will actually help when there is an emergency situation? How do you feel like this simulation will help you?
Oh, knowledge is power, right? So the more we know, the better we get. And be put in a situation that's real, it's going to help a lot for everybody in the community. Yeah. And even those who aren't involved and they see, like, because there's a lot of movement, a lot of activity is going to happen. The hospital is going to be moving and pretty fast pace here, so I think it's just about awareness.
You're all actors and actresses as part of the exercise or whatever, friends and family. After we have all the actresses and actors and first responders are doing their thing, then you can come to the gate as you would if you were friends and family of what's going on today. You're wondering what's happened with your loved ones. You get your script, so I haven't seen them, I don't know. But then at that point, someone will direct you to where you need to be. It's likely going to be the terminal building, but just so you all know, we want to keep this area clear for a while so that we don't get a bunch of people kind of in the way of all these first responders and everything else that's going to go on and muddle the waters of our initial response. Okay?
And if we're already waiting, like if our role is that we're waiting for the plane, wouldn't we be already in the terminal?
You would, absolutely.
So
Then you can go there.
You can go there.
If that's what your initial role is, that's a good spot to be.
What's your name?
Bronwyn Young.
What's this person's name?
I don't know my name, but I know my brother's name is Danielle Carter.
Okay. So you're holding a script. Tell me where we are and what you're here to do.
Sure. So we're here at the airport for a mass casualty training exercise. And I have a role here today as a local media person, but I'm going to pretend like I know somebody on board when I really don't, because I just want the digs.
Well, that's tricky.
Mm-hmm.
That's sneaky stuff.
I know. I'm
trying
into
to get
it.
The scoop.
That's right.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Great. Have you participated in one of these before?
I have not. I'm really excited. And I heard that they're just putting the makeup on the teenagers because they're going to make them look very broken. So this is going to be quite realistic and chaotic, and I'm excited.
Okay, best of luck.
Thank you.
Break a leg.
Hopefully not.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I'm the regional manager for Northern Clinical Simulations. We work with the education team. Our primary task is to simulate the real-life situations. Code Orange is one of those, like, which we are practicing today.
And Code Orange is?
Code Orange is massive casualty. Mm-hmm. And then it's a huge process with the whole community, city of people, the firefighters, the police people, and also the hospital. Hospital is kind of a key role in it, just because we are going to simulate how we are going to distribute and how we're going to take care of all these kind of climatical and non-climatical code oranges. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's what we are.
Okay, and you're adding blood. I heard you say that we needed more blood there. Yeah. What is this?
This is simulated blood. It is made with a special blood powder, which is specifically created for simulations, which is added with some water and some alcohol. Mm-hmm. Creates a blood-like consistency. It also leaves marks like blood. They're also going to be everywhere blood. So since it's a mass casualty, everybody's hurt, everybody's amputated. There needs to be some real blood simulated. Rush to that. You can't actually have real blood. So.
Yeah.
Plus, believing this is an IPE session, so interprofessional experiences. So there are many kind of people here. They're not just... There's going to be simulation involved. There's going to be fire brigade involved. There's going to be police involved. There's going to be people from the hospital involved. So making sure all of them come together and they can actually work as a team and coordinate all through is why we do all of these practices.
Yep.
We try to make sure all simulation sessions are as real as possible.
Okay, I think they're going to get started soon. Awesome. Gentlemen, what are your names?
My name is Jasniel Dillon.
Archit Sachdeva.
Hi, I'm Dave Wilford with the Buckley Valley Critical Incident Response Team.
Okay, so... we're here beside an aircraft that's cut in half for a simulation of a plane crash. What, from the critical incident response team, what are you taking out of this exercise?
Okay, our role at the end is to give people information on kind of common responses to critical incidents. So this is a critical incident, or will be, mock. And there can be an awful lot of repercussions, so stress for sure, psychological implications, emotional responses, physical responses, and these are all kind of common responses from a critical incident. And so it's to kind of give people information on normal or common responses to a critical incident. And so afterwards, people don't realize that they're going crazy. They don't want to socialize, maybe. They don't want to eat. They don't want to do normal activities. So it's a heads up. It's an information thing.
Okay. What organizations are you working through then? Like, how would people be connected with you?
Okay, so we're a program of Northern Domestic Peace. Mm-hmm. So anyone can contact us after a critical incident. So this is mock, but there have been motor vehicle accidents, there have been suicides, there have been a whole pile of horrible things in the community, and so we support people after that.
Yeah. So today, are you here as an observer, or are you here to kind of represent?
Okay, so part one is observing. Part two, at 3:00, we're going to be doing what's called a RITS, which is rest information and kind of support.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much.
Great.
I tagged along on paramedic and teacher Matt Anderson's tour of the scene. He was there with his EMR class from Kiawaget in Whitsett, where we surveyed the scene as he pointed out some of the reasoning behind how passengers were being treated and in which order.
See there, you got a red tag. Look on her wrist. See the red tag? Critical. Critical. So she needs help. Red tag on her wrist. You gotta be like really paying attention when we do ours. You gotta really look close. So we can come over here just a bit, just so we're out of their way. So let's see over here. See, he's checking her breathing right away. And I'll get into it more with you guys, but if their RESPs are below a certain level and their LOCs below a certain level, we'll talk about it. They would be, well, you tag them black, right? You tag a black and they're dying. And I know it's harsh, but like you go after reds and you leave the other ones.
It's an EMR, so emergency medical responder. So we would be the first responders only. It's like the first level past first aid. And then after that will be PCP, so paramedic.
Okay. So that's what you want to be. You want to be a paramedic?
I'm itching towards it, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so when you're here and you're in the scene and like people are like screaming and crying around you, how does this make you feel?
It's definitely nerve-wracking, but I feel like I would be able to handle it. Yeah. Just given all the training and practice that we've already had.
Can I ask, you're all observers, but are you part of like a group or something like that?
They're my students. Like, I'm the EMR instructor, so they can work ambulance when they're done.
Yeah.
I'm a paramedic, so I'm just bringing my classes so we can watch.
After the airport, we drove to the hospital where we met with Northern Health's Health Services Administrator Cormac Hickish, who gave our small group of town councillors, MLAs, ambulance drivers, and others a tour of the simulated emergency response in the Smithers Hospital in case of an emergency. The hospital was taking the emergency preparedness very seriously, practicing real-time decision-making and logistical adjustments in a high-pressure, realistic scenario. Our tour gave us a behind-the-scenes look at how staff adapt and operate during a simulated chemical emergency, as well as mass casualty incident. The triage area was moved from the front door to the back door due to the simulated chemical contamination, and the decontamination shower is located at the back of the hospital, which is not typically used for patient care. So where they had the shower was a bit of an awkward location, which was near the morgue and support services, but the team adapted as needed. Staff were not pre-briefed on the exact scenario, so they had to pivot in real time, as it would happen in an actual emergency. Actors who played the victims at the crash site were being replaced by mannequins to simulate ongoing care. Teams were practicing realistic emergency responses, including protective measures for chemical exposure.
When the call came through to ER, we do have some Code Orange resources. You see that's where the vests come from, et cetera. There's signage. And so what we end up doing, the ambulance bays are actually the other side, as you might recall. So whether you're a real walk-in patient, or you're a bystander, or you're part of the exercise, you all come through the same. This is Heather Crozier from MDC, Health Emergency Management DC. He's done a lot of training, at least on the Northern Health side, to help our teams. So ambulance parks in an irregular spot at the front and works their way through. The triage that's happened in the field is respected and decisions are made as people come in. So reds are prioritized as they come.
Mike Andrews is a principal at GetSet Solutions, a Vancouver-based firm that trains people in emergency management. They were the firm hired to run the EOC, or Emergency Operations Center, for this simulation.
See this running part of this exercise. Part of it was designed by the town of Smithers. And this is the second year we've come here. So this is part of a progression of emergency management training and exercises that the town has been undertaking in an effort to build more and more resiliency, make it, you know, refining their best practices, building depth. Some of these people are different from the people last year, so they've got, if they have a prolonged event, they can spell each other off and what have you, which is exactly the right thing to do.
And different meaning more services or just bigger area? Bigger
different people wide sometimes. Wide. Last year was a train derailment, so different hazard, and we want to make sure that we've got, you know, some broader perspectives and things like that. So this is what we call an Emergency Operations Center, or an EOC. We love our TLAs in emergency management, our three-letter acronyms. And this is a whole of jurisdiction or whole of agency mechanism for dealing with an emergency situation. We're not managing the emergency from here. At the incident site, they're managing it. But if we're supporting or coordinating, if we had multiple incidents at the same time, and when I was in Bulkley in the Chaco Regional District in 2023, we had 18 fires threatening the built environment populations at the same time. So the coordination of all of those happens out of here. Operations here are fire department, police, BC Wildfire, BC Ambulance. They are senior representatives of those departments and agencies that are out there doing stuff. This is a very mature program here, and they're doing a good job.
Matt Herzog, Deputy Fire Chief for Smithers Fire Rescue. So from what I could do, what I could find from my research, this was one of the largest exercise of this kind in the north. And the reason for that is that we've got a live exercise happening on the ground with unifying command and multiple different agencies involved from across the north. We also have a Code Orange happening at the hospital, Bulkley Valley District Hospital, and an Emergency Operations Center stood up at the Christian Reformed Church. We have representatives from different local governments, elected officials, consultants, contractors, from all over working to make this exercise happen.
Is this feeling accurate for response times from the fire department, paramedics? I know the RCMP, I think, should probably be showing up if they're not here.
Yes, so RCMP, because they are very busy in the north. When we have events like this, sometimes they aren't able to make it. For the Smithers response, yes, it's very accurate. Of course, we sped things up with Houston Fire, Burns Lake Fire, Talqua Fire, Whitsett Fire. We had everyone staged already just to kind of help this move along. Otherwise, we'd be looking at multiple hours of response times for support from those other communities.
Yeah. What's the
result of this?
This is some of the most accurate training that we can do for our responders. We have high school students here with a full Milage team from Prince George or Northern Health. So, yeah, this is one of the most accurate things that we can do for our responders to get as many responders involved.
And I guess just last question, just like, so what about like the public? Is there going to be kind of like a, this is what we learned, this is how you can respond best to this?
So the town of Smithers social media will do posts on the event itself and what we did. And there is an after action report that will be developed from this that will be obviously made public, and people will be able to see what we learned from this exercise.
Yeah. Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, no worries.
Coming off the helicopter, then, sorry.
Search and rescue right now. Search these are the Rangers right now coming off.
Okay.
And there's one more flight of search and rescue coming in.
Okay.
The helicopter doesn't wind down. They get their equipment off. They stay nice and low, and then it's going to take off again with before they move away from it.
My name is Samantha Labaugh. I am the Communications and Engagement Officer with the Town of Smithers.
Okay, so we're kind of, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about this. It seems like we're sort of rounding up the day here. We started at the airport, hospital, and now in the EOC here. So how do you think it went?
I think it went really well. We had a really good coordinated response with regional partners all the way from Houston, Whitsett. There's a lot of people involved, a lot of moving parts, and we did a really good job. And I think we're all feeling confident with our abilities to respond to a real emergency.
Mm-hmm. What about for the people of Smithers if there was a real mass casualty incident?
Yeah.
I mean, people in this town, first off, news spreads really fast. Mm-hmm. Well, gossip can also spread very fast.
Yeah.
What do you think as communications for the town, what are you taking away from this as a way to most effectively kind of get the right information out as quickly as you can?
Yeah, so the key is to get the information out first and be credible. So it's really important to follow official information, and you know, you will see things on social media, rumors that will fly pretty fast, but it's important to always follow the RCMP's direction, the ambulance direction, as well as official sources like the Town of Smithers mm-hmm. or the highways, anything like that. Follow official information sources only.
A big thank you to all the crews and agencies involved in the Town of Smithers emergency response training exercise, which was one of the largest in Northern BC's history. It brought together more than 150 emergency personnel from across the region. The training was funded through the Union of BC Municipalities, or UBCM, Community Emergency Preparedness Fund. The Skeena Watershed Conservation Coalition is a diverse group that formed in 2004 with an aim to think long-term in regards to cultivating a sustainable future from a sustainable environment in one of Canada's largest wilderness areas of the Upper Skeena. Their office is located in Hazelton, where I sat down with the director of programming to talk about two of their flagship programs, Women on Water, or WOW, and Youth on Water, YOW. Youth on Water is a three-day rafting and environmental stewardship experience which focuses on creating deep connections with the Skeena River and understanding the environment. Each year, the Skeena Watershed Conservation Coalition offers Youth on Water experience in the communities of Terrace, Gitwangak, Smithers, Whitsett, and Hazelton. This year marks 15 years of Youth on Water, a free program for applicants under the age of 19 to spend 3 days learning the skills of technical river guiding, swift water, and field technician skills, along with building healthy connections to each other, yourself, and the environment surrounding us in the north.
So my name is Anissa Watson, and I work as the Director of Programming Execution at Skeena Watershed Conservation Coalition.
Both the Youth on Water and the Women on Water programs, they promote skills training, well-being, connection, culture, and stewardship.
Yep.
Can you speak to me about what some of those words mean to you in regards to these programs?
Yeah. The big thing about getting people out on the river is there's an experience that happens when people spend time either on, in, or near the water that speaks to their own sort of connection. It's hard to explain. But what we notice as an environmental organization and one that really wants to promote individual sense of responsibility to taking care of the land and the river is that when people have that sense of connection, whether it's through having fun, whether it's through cultural history or through food security, that desire to be responsible for the land is inherent. It comes and it just happens, and it's very driven by personal values, personal experience, and a personal desire. And when we can collectively build that in a group of people, in a population, in a region, then we have a really mass strength of environmental stewardship and sense of collective responsibility. And so those are the reasons why we started the YAO program. We wanted to engage youth in ways that they would feel ready to stand up for environmental concerns, but also recognize that we couldn't ask people to do that without having that relationship piece there. The other piece is understanding how important it is to provide safe spaces for people to build their own resilience to climate change and climate catastrophe, which is what we're starting to realize is really impacting especially our young people. So in the space of being on the river and working with other people and having fun and challenging ourselves, we're also able to explore the different factors of ourselves that can be strong, can bounce back from really hard things, and can ignite that spark when we need to stand up to things that scare us. Mm-hmm. Because there's often experiences on the river that will happen where we're challenged physically or challenged mentally that we can apply to other situations in life. And having that memory of those other circumstances on the river can really help us in the future. Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
In your time working with Youth on Water, what progression do you see happen over this 3 days? You have alluded to it, and I just wonder if you have almost an anecdote or a story without using their mm-hmm. names, if there's an example of seeing that transition and almost seeing like what you're describing, where they're banking this experience mm-hmm. to pull from later on in life.
Yeah, I can speak to an experience of being out with a young woman who was facing multiple challenges in her own personal life. And a lot of it was around making decisions that weren't always the right decisions. So we were floating from Kispiox down to Kasan Village, and she was in an inflatable kayak with one of our guides and another youth. They went through a bit of a rapid. She stayed in the boat and the guide and the other youth fell out. And her decision making was so good that she went and she got the youth first because she knew the guide could self-rescue. So she went and paddled to the youth, got the youth in her boat, and then paddled to the guide, got the guide in the boat, and then got into an eddy, and then checked with both of them to make sure that they were okay. That whole scenario took probably about 5 minutes. Like, it was just a really, like, really quick happening. And when we debriefed it, I asked her, I said, why did you decide to do what you did? And she linked it all to be the priority was the youth who couldn't self-rescue. I knew the guide could self-rescue, and I knew that if we got everybody into the eddy that we were safe. And I then immediately helped her apply that to her own life and just said, look at how you made decisions under pressure. You knew exactly what to do. You helped all these people and you kept yourself safe. Like, how can you just like honor that part of yourself? And later on in life, it was several years later, she was dealing with some major stuff and she was able to reference that time to say, I can make good decisions. I know how to prioritize my well-being. I know how to take care of others. And then she just took that into wherever she was challenged and used it. So those kind of situations often will come up. And when we're working on the river, our guide team is not just a set of river guides. They are informal educators. They have training in trauma-informed care. They're highly trained in safety and rescue. So they're able to notice these little golden moments where they're learning opportunities and help the youth like reflect and apply them. So that learning comes full circle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so empowering too, because you can't have an epiphany for someone.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
How do you make a program that sounds this important, but also just like daring and a little bit punk rock to take youth out on the water and turn those youth into people who then later take other youth onto water or women onto water?
How do you do that free for 15 years?
So we get incredible community support. That's the biggest thing that keeps us going is the relationships in all of the communities. So we operate all the way from Terrace, Smithers, Witsit, Gyoongak. This year we're exploring a community program in Gitignao. And then we work in Hazelton as well. And then provide trips to other areas too. So the biggest thing is our relationships. So we would not be able to do this without the support, trust and commitment of our community partners. So each of those communities has champions who have been volunteering their time for years to help us get the youth ready, help us do the outreach, help us connect with the families and the people who would be really excellent guests, like hereditary chiefs and things like that, and just welcome us in and promote our program there. That's a big part of it. And that's something that we put at our biggest, highest, most important piece. The next piece is through funding. So we are able to access funding from a bunch of different organizations, which is helpful, and just that ongoing support to our program through different funders. Mm-hmm. And then having people in our community, like I mentioned, who will come out to offer some support and things like that in kind, whether it's through hosting us for a day on their territory or providing our guide team a place to sleep the night before, right, or whatever. Yeah. So there's that as well. I think the biggest thing though has been, like, we have to, on the flip side of getting kids out, we have to make sure that we're extremely safe and we have to make sure that we use our risk management protocols properly and things like that. The two months or so that we're out offering our program, on the other side of that, for probably about 4 months out of the year, we're spending like days on the river, days learning, doing training and things like that, so that we know we're offering the best possible safe program for youth as well.
Yeah. Are applications still open for youth on water?
Yep. Yeah, we have applications open on our website and on our Facebook page, or people can call our office and we can help them fill it out. Mm-hmm. And then same with the Women on Water program. Those are also open, and they're basically open until they're filled.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for anyone who's listening, maybe they have a child or know a child that maybe this would be really beneficial toward, could you give me a little bit of the nuts and bolts as far as like age range, mm-hmm, that you're looking at when you consider youth, and then experience as well?
Yeah. So we want to make sure that our programs are as accessible as possible. So we will accommodate basically anyone between the ages of 14 to 18 for, mm-hmm, our Youth on Water program. Physical ability, health, and things like that, we take them into consideration, mostly so that we can ensure that we can accommodate people in our boats. Mm-hmm. There doesn't need to be any prior experience of being on the river. If people feel nervous about swimming, we always let them know, we don't expect you to be able to swim. We have all of the safety gear provided for them, so we can, and then we teach any sort of self-rescue or safety skills needed to be out on the river with us. Yeah. And then for the Women on Water programs, that's open to anyone ages 14 and up who identify as a female, and we're able to, again, accommodate multiple different needs out on the water. Yeah.
Awesome. So what are you taking away from it? What do you understand maybe a little bit better about youth culture that's changed and how youths are experiencing this time, mm-hmm, in the world?
I think first and foremost, I am always like humbled and like gratefully surprised at how incredible youth are at being leaders, at finding multiple creative ways to solve a problem that as an adult seems like hopeless. What I've seen more and more is youth are being driven, I think, through climate concerns to really access and use their voices to speak about what they need and advocate for their future and really hold accountable the organizations and systems that have just let things slide and aren't really looking towards a healthy environmental future for our youth. And also how vocal they are about wanting to ensure that youth have access to the land, to the water, and to the services that they need. And then I think the big thing about being out with the YAO program that hasn't changed over the course of time is how beautiful our area is and how easily we can take it for granted. The things that we see every day from the land and from the road look a lot different from the water. I have the privilege of seeing these sections of river over and over every single year, and to take a new person out on there and to see it through their eyes and to hear them talk about how beautiful it is always reminds me of how lucky we are to be here in like a healthy, intact watershed.
Oh, awesome. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you to Anissa Watson, the Director of Programming Execution at the Skeena Watershed Conservation Coalition, for sitting down to speak with me about YAO, Youth on Water, the Skeena Watershed Conservation Coalition's free 3-day rafting immersive experience. If you want to find out more or apply now, you still can. You can go to skeenawatershed.com, or you can find Skeena Watershed Conservation Coalition on Facebook and find the application there. CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.